from the Squamish Chief.
This is The Squamish Sound. I'm Keely Bartlett.
And I'm Stephen Chua. This is the fourth episode of our weekly podcast.
You'll hear the story behind the story as we take you into the newsroom. We'll talk about what did and didn't get into the paper this week. On today's show, we're covering Squamish's plastic ban and the latest from the school board. Okay, so almost as soon as we posted this story online, we got a lot of comments. So can you tell us, why are straws and plastic bans so controversial?
So with respect to straws, to start with, a lot of it traces back to a really, really influential video that aired a few years ago, and it went viral. It was very well viewed in most social media platforms, and what it shows was a turtle that had a straw that was stuck up its nose. What it basically illustrated was straws, up until this point, you know, everyone was talking about, like, the beer can holders and all other varieties of plastics. And straws hadn't really been seen as this kind of item that could really, really impact and harm a marine animal's well-being. But after seeing this video of having a straw in this turtle's nose for such a long time, presumably, a lot of people were just like, you know what, this is also harmful. From then on, you did hear a lot about banning plastic straws. And that has been in the public eye for a very long time, especially since in recent years, people have been developing alternatives to that. So you'll hear a lot about plant-based items or materials being used to create straws. And those would presumably dissipate or degrade better. So they wouldn't be, you know, if they got thrown into the water, into the ocean, they would just kind of melt away. There's also talk of, you know, using metal straws as well. And just having those as something reusable that you kind of keep forever. So that is, I guess, the story behind plastic straws. Plastic bags has also been something that people have been talking about for a really long time. The reasoning was just pretty simple. Plastic bags are very hard to compost, if impossible. They don't really degrade very well or at all. And there has been a movement for quite some time to basically bring your own bag. And grocery stores have been rewarding this. There's now like a 5-cent bagging fee if you choose to use a plastic bag. So all those two things kind of put those two items, plastic bags and straws, as kind of like the forerunners of things that a lot of municipalities want to ban. Furthermore, there's also been a lot of conversation with respect to Victoria, because that has been a municipality that has been quite aggressive in banning plastic bags. That went all the way up to court. And a lot of municipalities have been watching that case and seeing, you know what, do municipalities have the power to do that? And what the councilors were talking about this past meeting was they have been watching it, and the courts have sided with Victoria, at least in this case. We're not sure if it's going to get appealed. There's always that chance. But this initial finding of the courts suggests that municipalities now have that power, so people might be a little bit more willing to try and flex that.
And so tell me about the conversation that you had with the mayor after they had passed this motion.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, the story behind the story, once again, why we do this, a little bit of a fun fact. I was actually messaging my coworkers back and forth, and one of them happened to be you, and you actually suggested, hey, you know, like, disabilities has been a very big factor when looking into plastic straw bans. And you suggested, actually, why don't you, if you ever have a chance, why don't you just bring it up with the mayor? And luckily for us, there was actually a recess taken a little bit after that discussion was happened. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes you just never get that little opening. But for some chance reason, we were able to get a recess. And I just approached Karen and asked her, you know what, how is this going to work with respect to a person who has a disability who needs a plastic straw? Because the talk is, with a lot of advocates, is plastic straws are uniquely suited to people who have certain conditions. One, they're very flexible. So, like, if a person has a condition that requires them to kind of bite down hard, like a metal straw, that won't work. That would damage their teeth or more. Same thing with a plant-based straw, where that would just destroy the straw immediately. Plastic, that doesn't happen. There's also the concern with respect to hot liquids. Metal straws, understandably, that would cause, like, you could very easily burn yourself if you do that with a metal straw. Plant-based straws, they just melt immediately. Plastic straws, they make the cut. And then finally, there's also like the sanitation aspect of it, whereas sometimes metal straws aren't really the easiest to wash. And for a person who has a condition, you know, they might not be able to actually put in the labor of just, you know, washing that straw by hand over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. So all those things combined have kind of made plastic straws a very big issue for advocates for people who have disabilities. Mm-hmm. And we asked Karen, you know, in this case, if a person has a condition, where do they go? And she seemed quite warm to the idea of allowing and working into the ban a provision that would allow a person who has a condition or a disability of some sort to still be able to access a plastic straw. It should be noted, however, that the actual motion that they put forth in council, at least this initial version of it, does not contain any language with respect to giving people with disabilities access to plastic straws. So we're going to watch that and see how that works out. Maybe as different iterations of this proposal come forward, we might be able to see that change.
Mm-hmm. And for some people, I know when I've reported on straws in disability before, and a lot of people would say, well, why don't they just bring their own straws? But that creates another barrier for people to go to a restaurant or anything like that. And the fact of the matter is, for some people with disabilities, having access to straws means that that's the only way that they can stay hydrated. And it is a life and death matter for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's also another cost factor too. And people with disabilities often have higher rates of poverty.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're going to be moving on and switching gears. The next story. The Sea to Sky School Board received a number of recommendations for its provincial funding review. One big part of Keely's story revolves around the labels we give students. So Keely, can you kind of explain what that means?
Okay, so what the school board was doing was they were going through all of these recommendations for how the province is going to distribute the funding that it gives schools. And one of the recommendations included in that was whether they should change the system for special education funding from being on a basis where you look at a student's file and you give them funds according to what their medical requirements are. And they're looking at changing that into a model where they would give for some of the students just an allocation for each school that the school can spend as is necessary. So that is categorized into two different sections, where one section are the students who have more rare conditions. If somebody has a wheelchair or a more extreme physical disability, that they require equipment or some more measures that a school typically wouldn't be able to afford, mm-hmm. then those students still receive the same funding. But it's for students who have what are considered more common in our society, so maybe a behavioral issue or maybe ADHD, that's something that we can expect to see in almost any community. And so mm-hmm. the school board has been recommended that they would receive funding on that basis. And the students, what's really important about that is the students who would normally have to go get a formal medical diagnosis would no longer have to go do that. So this took up quite a bit of time in the meeting because the trustees were generally in favor of this. They said that this is really important not to stigmatize these students, not to make them feel like there's something wrong with them and then give them help. They said, let's just skip ahead and give them help. We know that there are going to be students who have different requirements to help them learn better, that suit their needs better. So why don't we just provide that instead of making somebody go to the doctor and be told all of the things that are wrong with them. So one trustee, though, Cynthia Higgins, she had a really interesting point where she asked, with the label that students typically get, that medical diagnosis, it's not great for the student's self-esteem, but could that affect their long-term chances of success, say if they're applying to post-secondary schools? When you don't have that label anymore, are they still going to be able to access the same resources? Are they still going to be given the same kind of allocations that they are now? So that was a really interesting discussion, mm-hmm. and how that would play out if this funding model continues and if it's actually implicated, which it won't be for a few years.
Mm-hmm. That's really an important point, because in trying to help a person, presumably you wouldn't want to broach the topic like, you have this condition, you have this label. Mm-hmm. Yet on the other hand, sometimes having a label can actually be a very good thing, because that allows that person to access resources and to mm-hmm. access help.
And it's not that these resources are going to be taken away from the students or that they're not going to receive funding anymore. It's just not going to be so formalized. So the same resources are still going to be available, and they're still going to have, you know, their education files. It's just not going to be more of a medical record. And so they did have some discussion about how going forward to, if they decided post-secondary was the right fit for them, how they would still help though with that transition for the students, that they wouldn't be left to their own once they graduate, or once they're graduating and applying mm-hmm. for the next step in life.
Okay, so now we're going to go over to our editor's pick. This is the segment where we bring in our editor, Jennifer Thuncher, and she tells us what, in her mind, was the story of the week.
Jen, what you got?
Hey, Stephen. So first of all, who are your favorite people to interview? Not a person's name, but what kind of people?
Ooh, I don't know, like someone who is very animated, articulate, good with words, good storyteller.
Yeah, that's true. I think when we were in journalism school, because we went to journalism school together, mm-hmm. I thought, oh my goodness, talking to politicians and celebrities, that's going to be interesting and cool. And when you get into the field, you realize not so much. I mean, they can be great,
yep.
but they're usually very scripted mm-hmm. and have talking points. And so what's really interesting is the regular people that we meet and do stories on who do interesting things, but who normally we don't see. So this week, I did a story about Celine Poirier. Hopefully I'm not massacring her name there. And she's a snowplow driver with Miller Capilano.
So tell me about what makes this the editor's pick in your mind.
It was just one of those things that was really interesting hearing about her job. We see people driving snowplows all the time on the road, but we rarely sort of slow down, literally and figuratively, to think about what that job is like. And especially being a woman, she's a mom of four and she's a snowplow driver. So I thought it was cool. And something that didn't make the paper was that actually in 2011, when she was driving a tractor trailer, it was a Volvo, 53-foot Volvo refrigerated trailer. She was driving in Montana and she was actually pushed off the road by a truck that came in front of her on black ice. Yeah. And so it hit her and she flew into a ditch and was physically thrown around her cab. And so that was in 2011. And after that, she rightfully, understandably, was terrified. And so the backstory is it took her a while to recover from that. Whenever she saw snowflakes, she said she would see herself being thrown around.
Wow.
And so, yeah, but she missed the road. And so she decided to give it another try. And that's when she got this job and has absolutely loved it. So I thought that was interesting.
Very cool. Well, Jen, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks.
The Squamish Sound is brought to you by the Squamish Chief. The music for this episode was produced by Stephen Chua, cover photo by Clayton Matthews. Have a story tip? Give us a call at 604-892-9161. Send an email to news@squamishchief.com. You can read these stories and more online at squamishchief.com, or subscribe to the newspaper and have the news delivered to your door every week.